This is Taking Action Today with Michael Alder, Episode 3. Let's talk about wholesale. All right, what's up, everybody? I want to cover a topic today, which is wholesaling real estate. Now, everybody gets into the market wanting to wholesale properties, and that's great. It's low risk. It takes very minimal, if any, of your own money to do. And really, it's just your time putting into it. And you could start turning checks within 30 to 60 days. Now, the problem with wholesaling property is everybody's sold on the concept that it's easy, and they just put any property under contract, present it to seasoned investors, and wonder why they won't buy from them. So today I brought in my real good friend, Roosevelt Goodman. We've done several deals together this past year. We actually just met about 8 months ago, hit it off, and been doing business since. But Roosevelt can do all areas of real estate out there. He's an extremely creative guy, but his wholesaling skills are the best I've seen in the area. So that's why I had to get him in the studio, break it down for everybody to know what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, and they could be successful as a wholesaler. So without wasting any time on this, what's up, Roosevelt? Thanks for coming in. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks a lot, Mike, man. It's an honor and a privilege to be here today, brother.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate you coming in. So let's break this down. You are by far one of the best guys in my area for wholesaling properties. What got you into real estate?
You know, I used to drive a truck for FedEx, and I made good income, and I just started, you know, I just got kind of tired of the daily grind, and it really wasn't looking like it was going anywhere, and I just, you know, started investigating as to where millionaires came from, and I discovered that most people made their first million in real estate. So at that point, I started searching out real estate investor groups, joined up with a couple of them, and met some people and met some private lenders and contractors, and we all started from there. So it was just a desire to kind of want more and do more than what we were currently at.
Excellent. Now, you were a truck driver for FedEx for a while, and you fell into real estate there. Did you just quit your job and jump into it, or did you phase into it?
You know what? I did. And in my book, I talk about that. I did what I advise people not to do currently.
Right.
I just jumped out of the boat, which, you know, wound up being a good thing initially. But when the market crashed, it wound up being not such a good thing. So I tell people now to, you know, try to hold on to your day job and kind of phase in slowly into real estate until you can replace your income. And then at that point, when you can do that continually, then quit. But don't get a $20,000 or $30,000 check. And I mean, when you work all year to make $30,000, $40,000 and you get a $30,000 check on one deal, that seems like a lot. But if it's not continual, then you're going to run into a problem later on in the year if you can't duplicate that success on another deal.
Right. If you get that 30 grand in one shot and you're not used to that, that 30 grand usually disappears pretty quick.
Amen.
I think we've all been there on that one.
Absolutely.
So when you first started investing in real estate, were you a wholesaler initially, or did you start with the retail end?
I started with the retail end. I actually was a rehabber, and I've bought and rehabbed over 50 properties. Been through the ups and downs and the highs and lows with dealing with rehabs and private lenders and the retail. So I was forced into wholesaling because when the market crashed, the banks went away. So you can no longer do retail transactions. So I was forced, basically, by the change in the climate in the market, to start doing buy and holds and to start doing wholesaling properties.
Hey, that's a very cool story on that there. So when you fell into wholesaling, what was the initial steps you took?
Well, you know, I'm a information junkie. I'm addicted to real estate. I eat it, breathe it, sleep it, dream it. I've paid for courses, seminars. I've been all over the country to various trainings. And so, you know, there's different niches in real estate. And I remember when I first started, people would say, well, you need to just get one niche. Just do one thing and do that one thing and don't do anything else. And that's kind of how I started doing it. But I realized that I was just leaving money on the table and passing up all types of deals because it didn't fit into my model. You know, the model we had initially initially we were buying for 20, we put 20 in them, and we sell them for 80. And that was the model.
Right.
And so if something didn't fit that model, then we wouldn't even look at doing it. And in hindsight, I walked away from tens of thousands of dollars in profits on deals because I had such tunnel vision. And the market kind of made me change my strategies a little bit and open up to other strategies. So wholesaling was something I had been very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Just through the course of learning about real estate, it's one of the first things that most people talk about.
Now, you had mentioned there that you've been to several seminars. I want to back up just a little bit because on my start, I shared that I was a hype seminar junkie. I was an infomercial junkie. I was seduced by all the nonsense. You got to have a good seminar story for me without naming any names.
Well, actually, I do. I bought a guy's short sale. For a while there, we were working short sales, and I bought a short sale course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I might have paid $5,000 for the course. I went down. The guy came here to do a boot camp and went to the boot camp. And I went down to Florida, actually, to do the boot camp. And so we came back here. We started working on deals, and it told me everything to do except the one thing I needed to do to get it closed.
Right.
Like, everything, it told me A, B, C, D, E, F, but I could not seal the deal. It was a component missing on how to close the deal. And the guy had came up to Orea, up to Columbus. So I drove down to Columbus to go to his event. I waited the whole day. After he got a break, I walked up to him and I said, I bought your course in Florida, da 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 da. You know, how do I do this? And the guy told me, and I came back home. I didn't even stay for the rest of the event. Mm-hmm. I came back home. I called my title company. I put it together. I did the deal, and I made $15,000. But it's just, why is that not in the course? Like,
right,
why do
right. Well, at least you had a happy ending on the story, and I love that. For the listeners out there, Columbus is 3 hours from us. So Roosevelt went all the way to Florida for a course, came home, learned everything but how to close it, and then drove 3 hours to meet this guy again to get him to show him the way. That's a killer story there. At
Absolutely.
Least it had a good ending out with that 15 grand. That's great.
Yeah, I'm resilient, man. I'm going to get the answers that I, you know, that
obviously,
I need.
Obviously. That's a great point, too, because most people would give up right there. They would say, I don't know how to close this. This doesn't work. I'm out.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, it just... I don't know. I don't think everybody intentionally doesn't give you everything, but it's kind of like they piece courses together, you know, and they want you to buy the next big thing. So,
right.
You know, you get the $5,000 thing and then they say, okay, well, nah, really, the $10,000 thing is what it is. And then the $10,000 thing, then now they market in the $20,000 thing and going on an island and hanging out with the mastermind, you know,
right.
Mastermind group. And it's always just upsell. And I have no problem with that, but I want to receive value for what I purchase. So,
right.
You know what I'm saying? If I spend $100, give me $200 of value. Don't have me spend $100 and give me $10 of value. You know what I'm saying?
Great point there.
And absolutely.
That's it. That's what it is, too. So don't be seduced by all this stuff out there, because that's what it is. It's just giant marketing.
Yes. And emotions, too. You
oh,
know?
Yeah. Yeah, they prey on them. Like I said, I was completely seduced by that when I was, you know, 20 years old. And I thought that was, you know, hype seminars were it, and I was going to make it big, and I crashed big following that lead. So,
and you know what, Mike? And I say this in my book, that everybody wants to get rich quickly. It's always get rich quick stuff.
Right.
And my question is this. What's wrong with getting rich slowly? What's wrong with learning the principles, the foundations of wealth, and then building on it brick upon brick with a solid foundation? Because then you will be able to endure. You know, normally when stuff come quick, it leaves quick.
Right. Yep. Very good point there. And you mentioned your book there. What's the title of your book?
It's A Quick Guide to Real Estate Investing. The subtitle is Avoid These 10 Mistakes.
Perfect. And it's by Roosevelt Goodman.
Yeah, you can look it up on Amazon. It's out there.
All right. Do you have that on your website as well?
Yes, it's on my website too. New Mercies, www.newmerciesllc.com.
Awesome. So Roosevelt's author, real estate investor. And like I said, this guy is a master wholesaler. And in my marketplace, I have people blowing me up constantly with supposed deals, and they're usually presenting me with things that are directly on the MLS or you know, junk properties that they're hyping up, saying minimal work, and you get there, and it's a teardown property. So that's why I want to get into this. When I met Roosevelt, he presented me with a deal right off the bat, and my mind was blown because I couldn't find it anywhere. I said, okay, this dude knows what he's doing, and he's pretty much my go-to guy at this point. You know, I don't have to look for properties anymore. I just call Roosevelt, what's coming up? And then I probably bought 8 out of the last 10 properties he's presented me with because his deals are that hot. So, Roosevelt, please share with us, how are you finding these amazing deals? Where can people start?
Well, I mean, it takes a lot of work. Like, I try to teach my my students and my assistants that every deal has its own timing. You know, so when you're doing your marketing, let's just say you get 20 leads from whatever marketing you use, from mailing letters, from driving for dollars. That's when you drive around and you look at vacant houses and you send those people letters. You can buy a list to mail to absentee owners and things of that nature. Expired listings, wherever you get your leads from, let's say you get 20 leads. Well, out of those 20 leads, you may find one lead that's a deal. One lead that turns into a deal today or next week, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now you have 19 other leads that came in, and most people just throw those to the curb. So you find one deal, you work that one deal, you close that deal, and then you back to the races again trying to find another one. Well, what I teach my people is to cultivate those 19 leads, because every deal has its own timing. So because the timing isn't right for them today doesn't mean it won't be right next month or next year.
Right.
So out of those other 19 leads, another one will be a deal in 3 or 4 months, you know, and a couple of them will be deals within the next year. So out of those 20, you can wind up with 4 or 5 deals. It's just that they're going to come at various points in time. And if you don't continue to follow up, if you don't continue to nurture those leads, then when those people are ready to sell, they're going to find somebody else. And when they're ready to sell, I want them to think about me, because I've been contacting them. I've been staying in touch with them. I've been texting them. I've been emailing them, you know, and I basically just stay in front of them. So when they are ready, they think of me first.
Man, that's such a powerful point you made right there with the follow-ups. What are you doing on your follow-ups? Are you contacting them every 2 weeks, once a month? What do you typically do?
So you know, I'm learning the world of autoresponders. We do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm kind of old school. I like to talk to people. As you can tell, I like to talk, you know, or at least that's what my wife says. So I really like to pick the phone up and call somebody, you know, and I'll actually put in my planner, you know, in my calendar, you know, 2 months from now, call this guy back, you know.
All right.
A lot of times I'll talk to people and they'll say, yeah, well, we got it sold. We already found a buyer, blah, blah, blah. And I'll say, okay, well, fantastic. Well, would it be okay if I call you back? Well, when you guys plan on closing that? That's like, well, you know, 30 days we should be closing it. Okay, well, you know, do you mind if I call you back in 35, 40 days and see how things went and you've closed it? And most people don't mind. You know, and so mm-hmm. then I will follow up and I'll call them and well, typically I'll check the record to see if it's transferred first. If it's transferred, then I know they sold it. I don't typically bother them. But if I check the record and see that the property hasn't transferred, then I will call them and just start up a conversation, ask them how they're doing, how did things work out, why didn't that work, and then, you know, try to see if they will reconsider my offer.
Man, I hope everybody's listening to that right now, because it does take work to be successful at wholesaling, but money is made in the follow-up, obviously.
Yeah, who was that? I think it's Ron LeGrand, one of the, you know, guru guys, says that, you know, fortune is in the follow-up. And that is so true. I talk about in my book how I made a $40,000 mistake when I was rehabbing houses. I think the house was over on Nelson. I was rehabbing the house. The guy 3 or 4 houses down came down. He looked at my house and said, you guys are doing a great job here, you know. And then he said, well, you know what? I'm trying to sell. My grandmother just passed and I got the house and I want to sell it. So I went down there to, you know, come take a look at it. So I went down there to look at it. And at the time, I told you my formula, buy it for 20, put 20 in it, sell it for 80. If
right.
anything other than that, I wasn't doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the guy wanted like 30,000, okay? And we just couldn't, he wouldn't budge off that. So it didn't meet my criteria. So I said, okay. I went back to rehabbing the house and I went to go call the guy. I don't know. Couple weeks later, I had lost the piece of paper. I'm bad with putting numbers on pieces of paper and wherever I could find at the time. And I couldn't find it. And so months later, I was going through a drawer and I found the number and I called him. And I said, hey, man, you know, Bob, whatever. How's it going, man? This is Roosevelt. You know, we talked about the house. And before I could even finish, he's like, man, where were you? I was like, excuse me? He's like, where were you, man? I lost your business card. I was trying to find you when I was ready to sell the house, man. He's like, you were right. I was asking too much. But I did wind up finally selling it. And I said, well, if you don't mind me asking, how much did you sell the house for? He said, I'm embarrassed to say. I'm like, well, just let me know. He said, $12,000. He sold it for $12,000. I would have paid him $20,000.
Right.
He sold it for less than what I would have paid for. And, you know, so even at $20,000 and putting $20,000 in and sold it for $8,000, that would have made $40,000. So not following up cost me $40,000 in profit on the deal.
Yeah, so be organized.
Yeah, I'm still working with that one.
I think we're all guilty of that. But yeah, that is a point that needs to be stressed. Obviously, a $40,000 mistake, you don't want to make that twice.
No. Yeah, that's an expensive piece of paper, man.
So we're out here scouting deals. We're doing follow-ups. We're capturing leads. What's the next step as far as marketing it to the buyers now?
Okay, so it's all about presentation. You know, it's all about presentation. People will call and just give you a name and an address and want you to do a drive-by and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. We don't really do that, man. We like to try to present a picture. You know, so typically what we do is we do marketing and we market pictures of the property. And then we let people look at those when they contact us. And if they say, well, you know, show me the house, I'm interested, then I don't show properties. Typically, I'll send a video. And I'll say, okay, well, take a look at this video. It's a virtual walkthrough. You can look at it at your own leisure and then give me a call back if you're still interested. And then that way they can see a walkthrough. And then if they want to see the property from that point, then at that point in time, we'll set up something where they can go actually see the property, because now we're basically ready to put ink to paper, because you've seen pictures, you've seen the video, you've got a breakdown of everything. Now you want to just go confirm this is the same house that I've been showing you the whole time.
Everybody has to listen to that, because I'm a cash buyer. The reason I do business with Roosevelt is because I don't leave my house just about an address and a price. Roosevelt sends me all the paperwork. He sends me a video. He sends me pictures. He sends me more information than I can handle. And once I absorb all that, I'm like, all right, this is a deal. And on the wholesaler side, you just work once. Nobody wants to keep driving to the house to show potential buyers this address and this number that you present to them. So Roosevelt puts in all the work up front. He presents me with all of his hard work, and based on that, I say, this is a great deal. Meet me here at this time, and if it's a deal from that point, we sign the paperwork and get it to the title company, and that's how both of us are making our money right now.
And you know what, Mike? I try to, like, some of my students, like, you just don't never know. Like, you would go to a house and they'll think, okay, well, this house, this isn't going to be a deal. So they go to the house, they don't take pictures, they don't take a video, and then a month later or 2 or 3 weeks later, the seller has a change of heart, and now they want to put the property in the contract. So they call me and say, hey, man, I got a good deal. Let's partner on it. I need some help with it. And the first thing I say, okay, send me the pictures. Oh, I ain't take any pictures. Okay, well, send me the video. Oh, I ain't take a video. Okay, so when you go there, you know, try to maximize your time, because I personally don't have time to be going to the same house 3, 4, 5 times to do the same thing over and over again, you know? So when I go to the property, I tell my sellers, I say, hey, I'm going to take a bunch of pictures. I'm going to walk through here. I'm going to do a video, and then I'm gone, you know? So I'm at the house probably, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. I try not to inconvenience them too much. And when I'm there, I take a gang of pictures, you know, and I shoot the video. And then that way, if later we're able to come to a deal, I have everything ready for my marketing, then I could just put it all together and start marketing it out to my potential buyers.
That's a great point there, too, because just because it doesn't look like a deal, you're already there. At least take the pictures while you're there and keep the information on file, because when it does turn into a deal on the follow-up, you don't have to make that extra trip. You're ready to market right there.
Exactly, yeah. Because, I mean, it's just, you will find, I'm learning, and I've learned over the years that, you know, people will have you wasting your time, you know, and particularly these people who say they wholesalers and they just say, oh, just drive by. I don't just drive by houses, you know, and then buyers will say that too, or sellers rather. They'll say, hey, I'm selling my house, you know, just drive by it. I don't just drive by houses, you know. I do all my research before I even leave my office. I know who the owner is. I know what the taxes are. I know the tax assessed value. I done did my research up front before I ever go look at a house, because if I go look at it and realize that she says she owned it free and clear, but she has a $50,000 lien on the property that hasn't been released, I'm not going to look at it.
Right.
You know? And then you call her and you say, well, there's a $50,000 lien on it. She's like, oh, really?
You found that, huh?
Yeah, you found exactly. Oh, I thought that, you know. Yeah. And so you say, well, you know what? If you can get that released or you get that removed, because I know, unless, you know, you can bring $40,000 to closing, because I can't pay you more than $10,000 for the house or whatever the numbers are. But it saves a lot of valuable time if you kind of do a little bit of research up front, you know, to weed out some of the time wasters. And then when you go look at the properties, take pictures, do videos, you know, and try to develop a system where you gather all of this stuff up so that you can, you know, make the most use of your time.
Yeah, that's a perfect point, because, you know, as a wholesaler, you don't want to be doing extra work. You want to be scouting new deals. So if you're there, take all the information and it's done. You got it in the file. You could always fall back on it. And cash buyers, we do not respond well to addresses and price tags, because it means nothing. You know, you got to send some value with it before we'll leave our houses, because we're busy too. And nothing's worse than spending the day in your car driving around looking at potential deals that are all dogs. It just leaves everybody aggravated, and you end up on the do not answer list.
Exactly. Oh, I think I told you about that.
Oh, yeah. I think we all have that filed in our phone. And for those of you that don't know what the do not answer list, Roosevelt, go ahead and share your copy of it.
Okay. So people, everybody wanted to be wholesalers, and everybody wanted to do real estate. And for people who know absolutely nothing, I do like a one-hour consultation where I talk to them. I give them the basics, the fundamentals. I send them a seller script, and I send them training on how to fill it out and how to do basic research, just so we speak in the same language, you know? Mm-hmm. And one guy called, and he didn't know anything, and I was trying to, you know, convince him to at least take the hour consulting. He didn't want to do that. And so he sent me some pictures, and, you know, he didn't know what pictures to take, you know? And then several months later, I seen him at a network meeting where the guy kept calling me, let me just say that, and I put him on my do not answer list. So basically, if somebody keeps calling me and wasting my time, whatever their name is, I just change it to do not answer. So when the phone rings, it just say do not answer, and I just don't answer it.
Right.
So we were at the meeting, and he said, everybody was talking about, oh yeah, Rose do this and Rose do that. He's like, oh Rose, yeah man. He's like, I've been trying to call you with all these deals, man, and you haven't responded. And I told him, I said, that's because you're on my do not answer list.
Yep. And everybody has that now, too. Even Emmerich, who's been in the studio, I know he files people on the do not answer list. I do it. And it's just because time is valuable. And if you're running us around and not producing any quality deals, and sometimes deals, you know, it just doesn't work out, and that's fine. But if you're consistently sending garbage, you will end up on the do not answer list. And that's why we're doing this. We want to help you avoid sending these dud deals out and just not delivering enough value for people.
Absolutely, because real investors, they don't have time to waste. Like, you know, I've bought properties. I wholesale and I've bought properties from wholesalers. And when I was rehabbing houses, I just did not have time to go look at all of these houses, you know?
Right.
I tell my coaching students, you have to kiss a lot of frogs before you find the princess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I kiss frogs every day, you know? But when you got two or three rehabs going on, you don't have time for that, you know?
Right.
So it's valuable for somebody else to put the marketing in, to put the research in, to do all the calling, to do all the screening, to go through all of these 10 or 20 deals and people to find the diamond in the rough. That's valuable to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And if I tell you that this is what I'm looking for, and if you bring me that, I'll buy it. But don't bring me what I'm not requesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If I only want West Side, don't bring me East Side.
Right.
If I only want singles, don't bring me two families. You know, you have to be respectful of what the investor is telling you they want and bring them what they want.
That is a great, great point there. Thanks for bringing that up. And then the next thing I want to touch base on, we have how to find deals, how to present your deals to your cash buyers. We got to talk about title companies now and wholesale deals, because me and Rose have aged tremendously over this one. So Roosevelt, what can people do to find title companies that'll do assignment of contracts for wholesalers and get their deals closed out for them?
Okay, so what happened in our Cleveland market was that when the market crashed, a lot of title companies went out of business. And so now the market is returning, but a lot of title companies in our market are kind of like shy or you know, they want to just do traditional deals and some of the more creative things some of them have a problem with. What I typically do is I want to talk to the legal person at the title company, because the escrow agents and things of that nature, they don't necessarily know all the legalities. So what I try to do when I talk to a new title company is I want to talk to the attorney, and then I'll call the attorney and talk to him directly and let him know exactly what we're doing as far as an assignment of contract. Basically, in contract law, any contract is assignable unless it states it's not assignable. But on our contract, we specifically put this contract is assignable. That's one of the clauses on there. So everybody knows that it's assignable. Now, banks do this all the time. Have you ever bought people who buy a property, when they buy it, one mortgage company is the servicer, and they send the money to the one company, and then next year they get a letter and say, hey, you need to send the money over to here. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe 4 or 5 years later, now I'm sending money over to here. That's basically because all the banks do are they assign their contracts. They assign their mortgages to another party, another bank, for a fee.
Mm-hmm.
So they receive the fee and then they leave. But the contract stays the same. Everything stays exactly the same. It's just that the new person is taking on the responsibilities of the assignee. So it's the same thing when you're wholesaling properties. If you have a property under contract, you have a legal right to this property. So the right to buy gives you a right to sell. So you can assign your interest to another party for a fee. And that party had to step in and fulfill all of the terms of the agreement that you previously had under contract.
So when you contact the title company and they say, oh, no, 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 we don't do that. Do you ask them directly, can I talk to your legal department? Or how do you approach them with that?
You know, that's a very good question. Many times I just let it go. You know, all title companies aren't investor friendly, you know. So if a title company is investor friendly, and I know that they work with investors, then I might take the extra step. But many of the title companies, they normally do, you know, average transactions where the house is listed with a realtor and the person is going to get a mortgage and is a standard traditional type of closing, which is fine. But that's not typically what I do. You know, we do lease options, we do land contracts, we do subject to deals, we do wholesale deals. So we do a myriad of different type of transactions. So we need a title company that can understand the intricacies of some of the advanced strategies and techniques that we use. And like I said, that's why I talk to the attorneys many times. But I don't like pulling teeth or trying to force it. If it just seemed like it's not going to work and, you know, my transactions are too complicated, then we'll just go to another title company.
Perfect. Good point. Don't waste too much time on it. And where can someone find investor-friendly title companies? Where would you suggest they begin?
Okay, so I would say go to your local investor meetings. Go to your RIA groups. You normally have title companies there. They're at the RIA group, so they work with real estate investors. That would be a very good place to start. I would talk to other investors or other wholesalers. Even now, when I talk to wholesalers, the guys that seem like they're doing a little bit of volume, I say, well, where you closing your deals at? You know? Mm-hmm. And then they'll say, oh, well, ABC or XYZ or something. So I say, okay, great. So then I call ABC, introduce myself, and then see if it's an opportunity for me to work with that company. So, you know, just kind of keep your eyes and your ears open. Those strategies typically work for me.
And something I want to follow up with on that, I think it's a good idea to have at least two title companies under your belt. And like Roosevelt said, we're learning every day, and we run into problems with title companies still. So if you have a couple of them, you could juggle your deals between the two of them, and that way you have cash coming in still. You're not waiting for one company who's all backed up with countless deals to cash you out on your deal. So if you have a couple under your belt that are investor-friendly, that's definitely going to benefit you.
Yeah, because I sent one deal to the title company, and I think it might have been Friday, and then I had my assistant called on like Monday or Tuesday just to make sure that they received everything. And they said, well, you know, we're trying to close everything that's scheduled to close by Friday.
So before they even touch your deal.
Before they even touch my deal.
Right, right. You know? Nobody wants to hear that.
Come on. You can't even start what you need to start. You got to wait a whole week. So you've had my deal 7 days and before you even going to look at it. You know? I mean, so, yeah. You run into those type of issues. But like I said, I'm resilient. I'm persistent. I'm calling them. I'm staying in touch with them. You know, the squeaky wheel is the one that gets the oil.
Right.
And that's absolutely true. You know? So, you know, it's like anything else, man. You just got to stay on top of people and just try to hold them accountable, that everybody do what they're supposed to do. And then that way everybody wins.
I love it. That's taking action and never quitting until you get success. Now, Roosevelt, we broke it all down on wholesaling here. Give me like 4 to 8 steps that the new guy or someone that has not been having good luck wholesaling, break it down for us in a couple simple steps that they can get started and get that first deal to the title company and cash out.
Okay, so the first thing I would say do is, you know, forget the MLS. Don't be looking at REOs.
Yes.
Don't be trying to forget all of that, okay? You need to cultivate your own private deals, because that's where you're going to find your most motivated sellers, and that's where you're going to make your money at, off-market properties. So find an area that's hot. Find a zip code that's hot. Call a realtor and have a realtor run a hot sheet for you. And basically what that is, you know, ask for the top 10 zip codes. What's the hottest zip codes? What's the zip codes that got the most cash transactions in this county? So for us, it's Cuyahoga County, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you run the zip codes and you get some hot zip codes, 07, 44107, 44109, 44102. You get some very hot zip codes. So then you know where cash buyers are buying. Once you determine that, then go drive those neighborhoods. See what's going on. Look for vacant properties. Write addresses down on vacant properties and then start contacting people. Talk to the neighbors. Pass out business cards. Leave something on the door of a vacant house to say, hey, I buy houses. I would love to buy this house. And start cultivating your leads from people who don't even know they want to sell. You know, they done forgot all about the house because they live in California and the house been sitting vacant for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a very good possible motivated seller. So you got to find motivated sellers. Once you do that, once you get the property under contract, you make sure that you have a purchase agreement that you sign with your seller. Then after you take care of that, next thing you want to do is you want to get an assignment agreement to assign to your end buyer. Then you take the assignment agreement and the purchase agreement to a title company that does assignments of contract. And from that point, when they have it there, you know, Cleveland, we got a city of Cleveland disclosure, and your particular area, you may have to do various things. But then you just kind of walk it through. You want to make sure that you are have control of the deal, even through closing. You know, there are some guys, this is what you don't do when you wholesale. There's some guys who want to get paid their wholesale fee up front. Now, like when I start with new people, I make them put $1,000 down, non-refundable earnest money. I want to make sure they're serious and they can close.
Mm-hmm.
But after we close a few deals, I waive that because I know you can close. I don't want your $1,000. I want you to buy the house. I want to close a deal, you know. But you will find that a lot of wholesalers want all of their money. So let's just say the assignment fee is $5,000. They want the whole $5,000 up front. Then they just let you go to the title company and then good luck on closing it. So if the deal doesn't close, they already got the $5,000. You don't have the house. And to me, that's a problem. So I want to make sure that the deal closes all the way through closing. So I'm there from the beginning. Whatever deal I've negotiated with my seller, I want to make sure that my seller gets that. If my seller is supposed to net $20,000 from the net proceeds of the sale, I want to make sure that my seller nets $20,000. You know, I want to make sure that the terms are there for my buyer, that everything that my buyer has agreed to or that I've agreed to in a contract, that my buyer gets that. So I stay all the way through from the beginning, all the way through until the deal closes, until everybody is paid. And I make sure that everybody is happy and that everybody got what they agreed to get in the deal.
I'm so glad you mentioned that paying the wholesaler directly, because there are a lot of unethical guys out there and anything can happen in real estate. Deals do fall apart, unfortunately.
Yes, they do.
So there's nothing wrong with giving earnest money deposit at all. It shows you're a game player and you're going to close, but you give it to the title company. That way, if it falls apart, it comes back to you and you're not chasing somebody down for your $1,000, $5,000, whatever the case may be. So always protect yourself. That's why we have title companies.
And you're right, Mike. You know, it's so easy, and it's with anything, basically. It's easy to give people money. It's hard to get it back.
Yes, it is.
Right? I mean, have you ever, you know, signed up for something and it's supposed to be, you know, free or $20 a month, and then you sign up for it, and then when you go to cancel, it's hard to cancel.
Yes, it is.
You can't find nobody. They don't have no phone number. You got to go through all these hoops and everything. So it's easy to give money away, but when you got to get it back, it's hard to get it back. So it's best not to give it in a situation where it may be hard to recover it. So very valid point. Give it to the title company, and then that way you know it's safe, held in escrow.
Man, that's great. Now, Roosevelt, you and I could go on for hours and hours about all forms of real estate, so I'm definitely going to have you back in the studio to touch base on other subjects.
We'd love it.
But for all the listeners out here, I know they're going to want to connect with you. Where can people find you at?
Well, we have a website. It's www.newmercieslc.com. Or you can just go on Google and put in We Buy Houses Cleveland, and we're on the first page. I think we're number 3.
Beautiful.
Put my name in the search engine and you can, we have a blog and we Twitter, Facebook, you know, the whole nine. And also the book is available on Amazon as well.
Excellent. I'm going to have all that in the show notes for everybody. Roosevelt, it was awesome having you in here. I'm going to have you back. Any closing words for the listeners here?
You know what? It's my pleasure to be here, man. I'm obsessed with real estate. I love it. I appreciate the opportunity to share. And I would just tell everybody to just do it. You know, just start. Just go for it. And you would definitely be blessed. And it would change your future and your family's future. So happy investing.
Excellent. Thanks, Rose.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening in today. For more tips on real estate investing and creating streams of passive income, stop by michaelalder.com or connect with me on Twitter at michaelalder34, or you can find me on Facebook. All right, everybody, thanks, and let's take action today.